Welcome to the Scariest Things Podcast, your gateway to horror films, where we track the trends and tropes of the genre. I'm your host, Eric Lee, and I'm with...
Mike Campbell.
And this is episode 7.
Episode 7. Hard to believe we're at 7. We made it past the evil number 6. On to lucky number 7.
Lucky 7, and this is, we're going to talk about monsters.
Yes.
And we recognize that monsters is a very broad term.
Right.
But I think, for the record, I can state that I... love monster movies.
Love monsters.
Love the notion of monster movies since I was a real little kid. Before I even actually was allowed to watch monster movies, I would go to the library at my grade school, and they would have books in little, maybe like 50-page books, mm-hmm. in little orange in bindings, and it was...
Oh, I think I remember those. Yeah.
Like The Mummy and Dracula Frankenstein and Godzilla and King Kong, and so.
Was Roy Moore in that set? No Roy Moore. Harvey Weinstein. Kevin Spacey. No, sorry. Trying to be topical.
Yes.
I totally remember those. Yeah. I totally remember those. It was like the Monsters of Filmland.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, super great stuff.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, all that kind of stuff.
And then, the best.
And coloring books. I would just like, whenever I got coloring books, I would always get the monster coloring books and whatnot. And I think back in the 70s, they had some real trippy coloring books that...
Oh, yeah.
I wish I could find those. There was some spectacular stuff that I'd find at the toy store, but... Anyhow, I think Mike, when he suggested we do monster movies, said keep a broad idea of what a monster movie might be, and for the purpose of this exercise, I'm saying for myself,
sure,
non-human, non-animal.
Non-animal.
And,
so no Jaws.
No Jaws. No
Piranha. No 3D.
No Anaconda.
Yes. No Anaconda.
And
there's snakes in there that big?
I think...
Okay, so no human, no animal. Sorry, I was interrupting you.
And by and large, I stayed away from kaiju movies.
Okay.
Because I think when we did our horror or not discussion, mm-hmm. I think the question was whether things like Godzilla would constitute... Is it scary?
Sure.
Right.
We will get there.
Hedged my bets, and I went, as much as I love Godzilla and Rodan and Gamera and all of those things, I decided I'm going to stick with the horror trope and go straight monster. Though I think my lead-off one will be an interesting push on that premise, but
okay.
let's hear what
I... Well, so I, yeah, I also sort of went non-human, so Roy Moore did not make my list. I went non-animal, so Piranha, even though Piranha is one of my favorite films, and Piranha 2, when they get to the coast.
Yeah. Piranha, directed by James Cameron, though.
Directed by James Cameron, also big on my list, did not make the list. And I also stayed away from... This was really tough for me. I stayed away from things sci-fi. So the Alien franchise didn't quite make the list. I mean, they're horrifying, and they're clearly monsters.
The first one is clearly a horror movie.
It is a horror movie, but it more tracks to sort of the sci-fi thing, the sci-fi side of the house. Yeah. But I'll probably contradict myself as we get into this. In fact, I think I just did. But
so I also did something where I what would be number one on my list.
Uh-huh.
I'm not bringing it up again because I've talked about it at length before, and that's The Thing.
Right.
The
thing is, it's not a singular monster per se. It's a weird mutated bloodborne pathogen freak out thing.
It's
not a singular monster. So maybe that's the fudge.
Or the fudge is that maybe I just don't need to beat the drum that loudly for one movie over and over again.
Just go see The Thing.
If you haven't seen it, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yes, The Thing is good. All right.
So I guess...
Yeah, start. I'll start us off. So, start us off with number 4,
and I think
the scariest monster movie of all time.
I am going to immediately contradict what I had just said.
Yeah,
I like it. I think it might qualify for both animal and kaiju. This is old school. This is the best of the 1950s.
Ooh,
I think,
can I guess?
Take a guess.
Black tarantula.
No,
black scorpion.
This is them.
Oh man, I saw this last fall.
Okay.
So close on my list. Yeah.
1954, directed by Gordon Douglas, James Whitmore.
Yeah.
Gwen, Joan Weldon, and James Arness, the Thing.
Yeah.
Is in this. And yeah.
Them is solid.
It is. This one, I think one of the differences with them compared to all of its brethren, because there were, I mean, you were mentioning, Black Tarantula.
No, Black Scorpion.
Black Scorpion. Tarantula was one.
Yeah.
It came from beneath the sea. Yeah. War of the Worlds. It conquered the world. Another one of my favorites, Beast from 20,000 Fathoms and the great Ray Harryhausen, right?
Yeah.
But
Them is awesome.
But the thing about Them is it's a cautionary tale. I think this one actually had something that it wanted to say, and this is the American version of Godzilla in a lot of ways, because it's talking about
the atomic age.
Yeah, the abuse of atomic power.
Right.
And the reveal of how, you know, for what Them is, it's Alamogordo, New Mexico, and the testing grounds.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cop comes up and pulls up and finds a little girl on the side of the road. He's like, "Little girl, what? Why are you out here?" And she's not saying anything. And then they start looking around. It's like, "Well, where's your mom and dad?" The trailer that she comes from is a total wreck.
And then they go to the gas station.
And they're trying to find the old man who runs the gas station. But there's a big hole. There's a hole in the ground, and the whole the gas station's trashed, mm-hmm. and there's a barrel of sugar missing.
Yep.
Hint. Turns out that the radiation has turned the local population of ants into mega monster ants, and I think one of the things that most endears me to them is
who eventually burrow their way to Los Angeles from New Mexico.
They fly their way. The queens fly.
Oh, that's right. They fly. That's right. So, yes, not burrow, fly.
But they have the best, some of the best movie posters. Now, the 1950s monster movie posters, they don't make them like they used to.
No,
they're works of art. And it's the kind of a thing where you see it on the side of the, I bet you in the matinee, and you go, "Mom, I gotta see this movie." Yeah.
I mean, the lettering alone is super cool.
And you know, I think that
what year was that?
1954.
54, right?
And you know, I think they actually gave the lovely Joan Weldon, who later became something of an opera star.
Mm-hmm.
They actually cast her as the scientist.
Yeah.
And so it was sort of ahead of its time in that way.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it was still in sort of the way of Hollywood in the 50s. It was kind of choppy in the way that they talked.
And, right, right.
And there's something wrong out there. I tell you that there's going to be they're big as houses.
But you know what? You know, the one thing it did set the stage for, which we talked a little bit about a couple podcasts ago, is sort of the gift and the curse of the government, right?
Yeah.
So this is the ultimate tale of the government is both your savior, and it's
and your devil. I mean,
and they caused it. They'll save you from it.
And it has that, you know, at the end of the movie, there was a reflection on what have we done?
Yeah,
the power of the atom. Maybe we shouldn't have split it for the bomb. And meanwhile, there's these giant ants that are burning in the background. But the movie was nominated for best special effects,
and who knew there was tunnels in Los Angeles.
Right. I went real old school for all right. monsters.
Well, it turns out, Eric, that 1954 was a very good year for films.
Okay, what do you got?
Number four, Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes.
So, you know, without Creature from the Black Lagoon, there would be no Aliens, there would be no Cloverfield, there would be no Mist, there would be no The Blob, there would be no Jeepers Creepers, there would be no The Descent. I mean, this really was, Them was a universe of evil ant creatures. Right. This was a singular character, and it really spoke, again, to the same basic theme, which is don't mess with Mother Nature.
Right.
It spoke to the fears of the atomic age, how mutations can happen, how it's ultimately the responsibility of man. And
the best rubber suit ever worn by any actor ever.
Apparently the guy who, I can't remember the guy's name, who played the creature from the Black Lagoon, but they used to keep him in this friggin' thing for like 14 hours a day, and they would just have to keep like a hose on him constantly because it was shot in somewhere,
it was in Florida. Yeah.
And
the Everglades,
and they would just have to keep a hose on the poor guy because otherwise he would just melt. The great thing about the film is, as I was remembering back and thinking about the film, is there's, you know, you would think that there would be, when there was obviously a sequel, but the sequel had nothing to do with the first film.
Revenge of the Creature.
It was Revenge of the Creature. Yeah, you know, at the end of the film, he's like all the researchers come out and they riddle the creature with bullets and he falls back into the lagoon and, you know, floats away, and you think, well, you don't know if he's dead,
right?
There's got to be a sequel, right?
Yeah.
Well, as I started to research this, I found out that in 1982 John Landis wanted to do a remake. Didn't happen because there was a conflict apparently with Jaws 3D. And then in 1992, John Carpenter optioned a script that was a total failure. In 1995, the studio tried to give it to Peter Jackson, but then he got King Kong. And then in 2012, Universal started into the Black Lagoon, which was supposed to be
right.
And
thank you, Tom Cruise, for killing that possibility, because you totally tanked the entire Universal MonsterVerse.
Yes,
then
in 2014 they just scrapped the whole thing. So interestingly, while there was no sequel, there's been so many high-profile attempts to rejuvenate, to resuscitate this franchise, and it's never happened. So the curse of the creature from the Black Lagoon is that it's cursed.
Yeah.
All right, so what do you got for number two?
Number two, I have... it's a guilty pleasure.
Yep.
I don't know how many people would actually call it a good movie.
Okay.
This is a 1997...
Zombievers.
I'm not including zombies and no vampires, no mummies.
Okay.
This is 1997... This is The Relic. It's directed by Peter Hyams.
Movie.
Yeah, Penelope Ann Miller, Tom Sizemore, James Whitmore, Linda Hunt. Now, I think this movie did itself no favors by having a box art that you had no idea what you were looking at. Makes right. no references to the fact that there's this fabulous monster in it.
Right.
The fact that actually the relic is a total MacGuffin.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the monster, this genetic mutant
right.
that comes out.
That sneaks in with the relic.
The relic, yeah. And so it's sort of the relic and the monster is what it should right. be called. I think this was a case where they had a good enough budget to do a really good scary beast that gets locked in with a cast of hundreds, and it starts eating everybody.
In a confined space.
And this is
what do you do just, in a confined space?
But not just any confined space. This is the Chicago Natural History Museum,
right?
And of course, what they do is that they're preparing for a exhibition on fear.
Right. Yep.
So there's a lot of kind of things that are set up for jump scares and whatnot, but really the not as much need for the jump scares, because this is the creature that grows rather rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
It's part gecko, part rhinoceros beetle, part tiger, which is where it gets its vicious.
But it's from Latin America.
From Latin America.
Or South America.
South America, and it's the Cathoga creature. And there's an anthropologist. You see at the very beginning of the movie, and he starts talking. He goes through this ritual of the Cathoga. And at first I thought, like, is this a summoning? Is this a...
Right.
No, it's just that he manages to find that apparently the South American tribe has these... They create these creatures out from this fungus that mutates people into... these monsters. And so
it is not a metaphor for immigration.
It might, yeah.
Well, like, maybe, I don't know. I don't think,
I think because in this case they went around what the wall would have been. Because this
1997 was not a big year for immigration.
There's a, I guess they find the crate that the relic arrives with the fungus that has the creature.
Yep.
Arrives in a Chicago port where Tom Sizemore plays a cop who has to check out this cargo ship with all the crew are decapitated.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, the Relic is a tight movie. I totally recommend it because the pacing is like super, super fast, and you're never off the hook. No, there's like no downtime to breathe.
And it sort of marches through. There's a big cast. The characters, I think the actors all, for a movie of this type, they really give as good a performance as you could ask out of them.
Yep.
I have a favorite trope, which is when someone drops to their knees and goes, "No!" and a lot of people will point to Darth Vader.
Sure.
But in this case, there is one of the best scenes. There's like soldiers drop in and it's like, to try and rescue everybody. And then the tiger creature comes in and he kills like three or four soldiers. And they're trying, the last guy's trying to get out. It's like, come on, let me out. Come on, let me out. He gets pulled up and then all of a sudden he goes limp. And then the guy pulls him out. It's like half a body comes out. And then the soldier on the rooftop just drops to his knees and gives us moment.
Don't mess with Chupacabra.
Yeah, and it's fun. The monster is fun. It's tight script, tight pace, good acting. Overlooked movie.
Yep, totally, totally.
You're number two.
All right,
number three, rather.
Number three is by the director Jun Ho Bong.
Good call.
Which I picked the movie only on the basis that I wanted to just say Jun Ho Bong. This is a Korean film from 2006 called The Host.
This movie is so much fun.
So much fun. So the monster emerges from Seoul's Han River. It focuses attention on just inexplicably terrorizing everyone. Now, I don't know what was going on in South Korea in 2006 or why would they would be so scared of a monster like this. I don't know that they have the same sensibilities as does Japan with regard to the nuclear age, but
This one had a feel like the alligator that gets flushed down the toilet kind of thing, right?
Kind of, yeah, kind of. But the thing that's great about this film is that much like we've talked about in previous podcasts, it really is the movie is about family at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And it's about while the monster is the stand-in for everyone's fears and everything, it's really about the family coming together in a concerted way to try to stop the monster. The thing I loved, and I remember vividly seeing this in the theater, and it was 2006 was like, CGI was starting to get really, really good at that point, but it wasn't great. And I remember so many films at the time where it was just this like muddled mess of imagery that didn't make any sense. And I felt like somebody just plopped me into the middle of a video game and I had no idea what was going on. The Host was this, whoever did the cinematography, mm-hmm. I don't know if that was Jun Ho Bong, but whoever did the cinematography did such a great job of like actually showing you mm-hmm. the monster, showing it to you in a broad perspective.
Right.
So you saw the monster interacting with
racing down the dock, eating people,
racing down the dock, eating people. And you didn't see like a quick snippet of the monster or a quick cut of the monster. You saw the whole monster in its entirety. And I remember and you saw it in daylight too. It wasn't like a rainy scene. It wasn't dark at night. You saw it in full daylight. And I thought, that's how to do it, because you get the sense of the enormity of this creature flashing all the way back to the 1950s and 1960s with all the Godzilla movies. You see how big this thing is.
I think it also exhibits a certain amount of confidence of the director and their monster. Because a lot of the times with monster movies, you want to show, and I think Ridley Scott was, I think one of the things about Alien, mm-hmm. a movie that was all shadows and sneaking, was that you didn't see, once you saw the alien as a guy in a suit, it surprised you, because I think when you saw this thing that first looked like a spider spider snake thing that falls off, and then the thing looks like a penis with teeth, and then
crab teeth creature,
right. And then
crab teeth penis creature,
and then it comes and it turns and then starts as it starts getting larger. It clearly has arms and spikes and stuff. Mm-hmm. They hid the creature because when they show it in its full entirety, it's like it's a guy in a suit,
right? Right.
I think.
Yeah, I'm certainly not suggesting that you in all films across the board you should hide the creature, but in some instances, showing the whole thing and showing it in the broadest possible mm-hmm. perspective is super effective.
I think one of the other things in The Host was when at some point it was hiding under the bridge and it was kind of this lump
right
underneath the bridge and they showed it and then everybody was looking at it, it was like, huh, what is that?
Right.
So
yeah. All right, so what do you got for number three,
2008, yes. Matt Reeves production. This is the sort of a 9/11 allegory. This is Cloverfield.
Cloverfield, super awesome.
I think one of my favorite found footage movies.
Oh yeah.
And this is to riff off of what Mike was just saying. A movie where you don't see the monster in its entirety, pretty much for the whole film, because it's actually a kaiju movie,
right?
But it's scary in the way that 9/11 is scary. That the city is being destroyed. You don't know what is happening. The Statue of Liberty's head gets ripped off and lands on the street side, and everybody freaks out. And you realize that there is something, you know, that panic hits. And I think, you know, the classic Japanese kaiju movie is thousands of people running down the street screaming as the monster starts stomping after them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Brooklyn Bridge scene
mm-hmm.
where people are trying to evacuate. They're somewhat orderly, trying to move down the bridge, and then the monster hits and just starts wrecking people and the bridge. And then the panic sets in, and then the Cloverfield monsters jump off of the big monster and the panic. It reminded you of people running away from the towers falling. I mean, right.
This is the ultimate, like, what would you do in this scenario?
Yes, no,
like,
absolutely.
Would you be the hero? Yeah. Would you just cower in fetal position on the streets of New York and cry yourself to sleep?
And what would you do? The creature sort of aimlessly wanders around just trashing shit. And the whole time you see a leg. Or you'll hear it, and the audio on that thing was so good. And you know, I thought it was, you know, I think there was a bit of the pretty teenagers, like it was like almost like because they were all having an apartment party on the roof deck, and everybody was it's a very sort of hipster young person with like relationship issues, and then the thing just gets house wrecked.
Yeah,
and I had a lot of fun with it, and I think it was. The way that they utilized the shaky cam took it full advantage of confusion and almost the journalistic feel of the movie. Mm-hmm. So, anyways,
it's a good film. And in fact, I think there's supposed to be a Cloverfield 3 coming out. The second one's good. Small minority opinion. I really like Cloverfield a lot. There's a couple scenes towards the end of the film, mm-hmm. like where they go back to the two buildings are crashed together, mm-hmm. and they have to jump from one to the other. Mm-hmm. And then they get in the helicopter, and the helicopter spins out of control. There were some scenes at the end where I felt like my belief had been stretched so far, so suspended.
Yeah,
there were some third act issues, but otherwise, super solid film.
I think the lights out moment, the real conclusion when the film cuts.
Yeah.
It was like, well, they come face to face, and it's the first time you get a good look at the monster, and then it's like, bink out, and it's like, nah, you know, I think that the randomness sort of went away at that moment. So I think that's another one of those third act issues. But
probably a couple other points at which they could have actually just ended the film and it would have been much more suspenseful.
Right.
But I'm sure it didn't test very well in the focus groups
right.
in Hollywood. All right. So my number two is the 2002... I'm pretty sure it's a foreign film called Dog Soldiers.
Oh yeah,
this is a routine. This is basically a bunch of like military special forces characters British. In Scotland. Right, okay. They're up in northern Scotland doing a routine exercise, and they run across a whole series of werewolves that have inhabited the woods around this remote area of Scotland, and things turn super ugly. They ultimately have to hole up in this house. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's really interesting about it, it's kind of like in the same way of like Day of the Dead, mm-hmm. where you have like military and you have sort of this strong military presence. And what ultimately happens is, like, even with a strong military presence, you would think that they would be able to defeat the werewolves very easily. But in fact, everyone starts to turn on each other. And it's a classic tale about, you know, what happens in these confined spaces. But
where the werewolves are actually the context that forces everybody to examine their existence in a small group.
Right. Right. It's a very bloody film. There's a lot of gore. If you're looking for a monster movie with gore, this is like got tons
of fun gore. Movie. You know what? A movie that reminds me of sort of a analogous to it but it's not a horror movie,
mm-hmm.
Southern Comfort.
Sure. Yeah. Southern Comfort is very, very similar.
And National Guardsmen going out there and.
Yep.
And shooting at the locals, not knowing that the locals are actually much more dangerous than they look.
The hillbillies being the werewolves in this case.
Right.
And or then, vice versa. Right.
And then not bringing a whole lot of live ammo to the party. It's
right.
Like, okay.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
Whoops.
No, it's a good film. And much like what we've kind of been talking about so far is this movie, I think kind of in the same way Ridley Scott knew when to show and when to tell.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't give you too much of the werewolf because, you know, obviously the werewolf could look a little ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But these werewolves were pretty cool. They were
powerful.
They were powerful werewolves. They were fast werewolves. These are not your Lon Chaney werewolves. I mean, they move through and they would give you much like in the same way that Evil Dead gives you the perspective of the demon, where they would fly through the forest. These werewolves, it would give you the perspective of the werewolf and how fast, like what clip they were moving at, what pace they were moving at. And that was kind of cool. So, go see Dog Soldiers. Stupid name. I don't know why they couldn't come up with something better, but they didn't. So what do you got for number two?
Number two is, and I mentioned this is going back to the well. I talked about this one as one of my favorite moments in horror movie. This is the 2007 Frank Darabont movie, The Mist.
Oh, yeah.
Great cast. Thomas Jane.
This is super close on my list, but again, it wasn't... much like what we had talked about earlier, much like The Thing,
mm-hmm.
it was not monster. It was monsters, plural. Right. So that's why I shied away.
Yeah, I mean this. And speaking of the great monsters, mm-hmm. That we have. There's the tentacle monster in the stock room.
Yeah,
where it catches the hapless stock boy who I think was. You know, he looks a lot like my buddy in the office, and Dan. And uh-huh. I was like, let me just nab Dan. And then there's the flying pterodactyl bird thing. He gets dragged. Yeah. Well, that was and the effects. It's like modest budget.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see the spiky tentacle thing actually slap onto a guy.
Yeah.
And then you start pulsing, and you can see it sucking the blood out of him.
Yep.
And he's shrieking, and he gets dragged out in the fog. Oh, God, that was like horror. That's really oogie boogie mm-hmm. stuff.
Yep. That is a great monster movie.
The flying pterodactyl bird-like things that are chasing the giant mosquito things.
Yep.
And the giant mosquito things that attack and then suck the blood out of the people inside the grocery store.
Yep.
So this is...
And this is government gone bad.
Yeah, this is government gone bad. The spiders with the vampire faces.
Mm-hmm.
The giant behemoth walkers, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a whole ecosystem of monsters.
Right.
And this is in the Frank Darabont Walking Dead preamble.
Right.
And we just talked about this, about having the monsters defining the parameters of what the situation is.
Mm-hmm.
The real the when the people turn on each other, that's the you have the internal conflict and then the external conflict.
Right.
And then at a certain point, it's like you make or break. And You know, the Marsha Gay Harden is a really creepy super Christian,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh, that's right. She's
trying to separate the believers from the non-believers and sacrificing the non-believers because that's what God wants, kind of thing. And meanwhile, these are just people who are trapped in a grocery store, and a lot of people just want to go home. They have loved ones who they don't know what's happened to them. Anybody who goes outside gets Andre Brower, who in a great moment of hubris strides out in the fog and gets zipped away on a. It was like okay, tie a rope to me just in case you can pull me back in, and wanders out, and then the rope just takes like a kite. It's like, oh no! And then it comes back, and it's just like half a torso.
Yep.
Right.
But yeah, no, it is the ultimate. It is kind of the ultimate reflection of it's A, what would you do, and B, would you really turn on your fellow man? And that's crisis 101 is like, do you keep your head or do you lose your cool?
Yeah. And you know, and that absolute nut busting ending.
Let's not spoil it.
Yeah.
Don't spoil it.
If you want the spoiler, you can go back and listen to the great moments.
Yes, yes.
Part of the podcast.
Which is number, was it number one?
Number three.
Go listen to podcast number 3.
Horror or not horror? No, number two. No, two.
Number two.
Yeah, 3 is horror or not horror.
Go listen to podcast number 2.
So anyway, that was my top one for this episode. What's your number one?
My number one is the 1998 Matthew Broderick classic. No, don't you dare. It is not the 1998 Godzilla. It is the 2014 Godzilla.
Yeah.
I love this movie. I saw it in the theater and I went.
Did you take Ernie with you on this one?
I did. I took my oldest son. We loved it. I mean, much like the host, they got it. They understood how you show the monster, mm-hmm. when you show the monster, what the perspective, how you frame the monster, mm-hmm. and don't be afraid. Like, you don't need to do a bunch of quick cuts mm-hmm. and show pieces and parts of the monster. Show the whole monster. Get the perspective on this thing.
Yeah, awesome in the most literal sense of the word awesome. It was when you first see Godzilla stand up in San Francisco,
yeah, it's
and you realize
crazy.
How big he is.
And there's a fight in the Honolulu airport that is just bananas. I mean, the whole thing is obviously it plays on the Fukushima disaster. It mm-hmm. plays on, you know, the references to, you know, the atomic age of past. But the whole thing starts with this great opening sequence involving Bryan Cranston and the nuclear disaster that sort of sets this.
I loved the very intro to the movie when they show the atom bombs going off in the Bikini Islands.
Super smart, yeah. Super interesting. Like they dial it all the way back to the original Godzilla. But there's a great opening scene where Bryan Cranston there's a nuclear disaster that's happening, and Bryan Cranston is trying to save his wife, and ultimately isn't able to do so. Again, kind of going back to this, like, you know, like how the importance of family and mm-hmm. how family sort of dials in all these different emotions and how you carry those emotions forward into your reality and ultimately mm-hmm. drives Bryan Cranston insane.
Right.
And the thing that's great about it is that, you know, much like the Mothras, the Rodans, the Hedoras, the Gamoras, the Ghidoras,
Mechazilla.
The thing that's great about Godzilla is that, you know, Godzilla is both good and he's bad. And ultimately, that's sort of this sort of Japanese cultural thing that I don't think most people understand. I don't understand it, like how the monster is both good and bad. I think it's a very sophisticated view on monsters to be able to be both good and bad at the same time. Like, Godzilla saves you, but he's really this horrible creature who's destroying your city simultaneously. it's a great film, and I would hope that they do more of this type of film. I mean, well, I know that they still continue to turn out tons of Godzilla movies, and believe
me, this particular line, because they did Kong Skull Island,
right? Which was it was a little bit of a mess, but there were some solid pieces and parts.
They're gearing up for King Kong versus Godzilla.
Sure.
Right. And
sure.
And but who do you root for? Because it's got Kong as kind of a hero monster, and Godzilla's a hero monster. Who knows if they're going to have Ghidorah come in and then becomes like a three-way brawl for it all, which is in the great Toho movie classic kind of trope. And
yes.
But I there's the great line from Ken Watanabe in the movie. It's like, let them fight.
Yes.
Which is just like, yes, yeah, yes. Yes. Fighting monsters.
Solid movie. 2014 Godzilla.
You want to see it on a big screen.
Oh yeah, for sure. But if you can't, a VHS copy will do just fine.
And a good subwoofer.
Yeah, and a good subwoofer. All right.
Okay. So we go now on to our next subject, which is Dead Undead, which is turning into almost an extension of our
in many cases of our
movie recommendations. But we'll pan one of them. We'll switch things up here and give you the Dead movie.
Yes, this is our opportunity to tell you what to go see and what not to go see.
So what movie would you tell our audience not to go see, Mike?
As we've talked about, I mean, I didn't realize this was going to be a through line with the whole podcast, but, I think what's really important about the monster movies is you have a clear perspective on what the monster is and what it looks like and how it functions and, you know, its perspective and its size and its shape and what it does. A film that came out a couple years ago, I don't even know what year it came out. It was, I think in a lot of ways, it had a lot of great elements to it. It had some great story to it. But that when it got to the monster scenes, it was, again, just this video game melange of just pixelated mess. And that was Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim has some good qualities. But, like, the fight scenes, to me, are unwatchable. Oh, like. Really?
Because it's like the Transformers for you.
It's like the Transformers. Like either it's in these driving rains at the dead of night, or it's, you know, 20,000 leagues under the sea. It's like pitch black.
You didn't go for the Tom Morello guitar soundtrack kicking in the background?
You have no idea what the fork is happening. And it's just a mess. It's just a complete mess. Whereas, like, I think the clearer the image that you present of the monster and the monster's size relative to everything else is so important. Toho, the great, you know, Japanese studio, they figured it out. They knew what time it was, and that's what they brought to it. I mean, whether it was something as mundane, I don't know that this was a Toho production, but whether it was something as mundane as King Kong Escapes or King Kong versus Godzilla, they knew how to, like, give you that perspective. This film,
my personal favorite, Godzilla versus Megalon.
I've actually seen it. So, yeah, Pacific Rim was just kind of a mess. I mean, obviously, a lot of people saw it. And which is not to say it wasn't a fun movie. There were some very fun elements. There was some very good storytelling. But the fight scenes and the display of the monster was just a fat mess.
You did get lost in the perspective sometimes when they would do some overt displays of how big the creatures are by showing little things like motorcycles that are picking up and getting floating around, but you would lose sort of where you were in the position of the battle.
Yeah.
I think
the battle scenes were so expansive that you just had no idea what was happening.
Although it's possible, because, I mean, I would think to something like the Road Warrior, the Fury Road, which was something which was going full throttle in a dust storm with guys jumping off of rigs and stuff like that, and you never lost where you were. The storytelling of the action sequence was where someone like George Miller knows how to do that.
Right.
And I think Guillermo del Toro is better with the small stuff.
Yeah.
It can be
done. Pacific Rim didn't do it.
I will admit, I do like me some Pacific Rim, but I also know that it's a polarizing film.
Yeah. All right. So what is your dead pick?
This is an undisputably terrible movie.
All right. We're talking about Godzilla versus Ghidorah.
this is maybe a little bit off of what we're talking about here, but this is a 2003 movie by Lawrence Kasdan on a Stephen King story.
Grand Canyon? No.
Dreamcatcher.
Oh.
I don't know. Oh, you can't wipe that one off of you.
Stinky.
But here's the thing. Morgan Freeman has recently done another really bad movie, but normally Morgan Freeman can get brought in to make a bad movie average, or an average movie good, or a good movie great.
Yeah.
How bad is this movie for Morgan Freeman not to drag it above the absolute bottom of the barrel?
It's got famed professional skateboarder Jason Lee.
Yeah, Jason Lee, Thomas Jane, Damian Lewis from The Americans and Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
It's got Donnie Wahlberg. It's got Timothy Oliphant. It's got a good cast.
Yeah.
And what a waste of talent. This thing's literally a shit show. Okay. There is a scene.
Not a shithole.
Right. Hey, Mr. President, here's your shithole.
Your shithole is Dreamcatcher's.
Yeah. There is a scene where they... I don't know if actually going into the story is going to really matter here. There's a scene where the four key characters who are apparently telepathic or... And they've got some weird... They got together for a hunting trip in Maine. They find a homeless dude.
You've already said too much.
Yeah. It's a guy dies on the toilet and shits out an eel, which probably comes back and attacks and kills somebody else. That's a bad movie.
That's your shithole part.
The
eel out the butt.
I think they call it a shit weasel. So, and the government gets involved. None of this makes sense. This movie, this is it in reverse.
Yes. Take your dream catcher down from your porch right now, because dream catchers are down. Sorry.
Like Stephen King movies, like It was a movie where it elevated all the kids, were just so inspiring and so much fun to watch, and the story, everything was riveting. Sometimes it's like, what, this guy, sometimes he can write a great story, and sometimes it's like, what the fuck? I don't know. Anyhow.
Shithole.
That gets us to the end of our episode number 7.
Wait, we gotta get our pick. My pick.
Oh.
My pick.
Yeah, no, actually both of our picks.
Both of our picks.
I'm an idiot.
Both of our picks.
We'll have to edit that out.
We're keeping it in. Jumping the gun.
Sorry.
So my pick for the undead film of the week is, sticking with the monster movie theme, is a great film, 1988, Lance Hendrickson classic, Pumpkinhead.
Oh, okay.
Pumpkinhead is like, it's like a hillbilly monster, Grapes of Wrath meets Frankenstein. It's got all these great sort of literary pieces and parts coming at you, but it's essentially about a family that wants to avenge the death of a family member, and they conjure up
Pumpkinhead,
which is an awesome monster.
Yeah.
Much like in the same way that Ridley Scott showed you Alien, they show you it in dribs and drabs. Obviously, you know,
is that a Baker designed?
Not sure. But you know the thing that's really interesting about Pumpkinhead is that it's, you know, one of the characters is sort of this like hillbilly, you know, this hillbilly community, and that sort of like sets the tone for this kind of weird backwoods kind of voodoo magic evil. And there's of course a crazy old lady, crazy old witch lady, who's the one that ultimately conjures Pumpkinhead. It's a fun movie. Lance Hendrickson is, you know, everyone.
Craggiest man in the business.
He's really great in this film. Super, super fun movie. I'm not going to say it's the best movie, because obviously
a fun movie.
I didn't make my top four, but it's a super fun movie, and you should go see Pumpkinhead. Eric, what do you got for
My undead pick.
Your undead pick. What should we go see?
I am staying within the genre, and I'm actually, this is, I'm going to pimp this movie because I think that it's, it deserves some attention.
Dreamcatcher 2.
I just saw this on Netflix.
All right.
It's a kaiju movie, but kind of not a, it's kind of a quasi kaiju movie. Mm-hmm. It's a weird movie. It's a comedy.
Uh-huh.
Kaiju and redemption story. This is Colossal.
Ooh, you heard of Colossal? I have not.
Okay,
so
this is Anne Hathaway. Ooh. She plays an out of work party girl who gets so drunk that her boyfriend kicks her out of the apartment and she has to go upstate to go back to her hometown, and she crashes at the house that her parents left her, and eventually she finds out that the world finds out that there's a giant kaiju monster that's wrecking Seoul.
Uh-huh.
Seoul, South Korea. But it's sort of stumbling around, just sort of crashing into things. It doesn't seem to have any motivations or anything like that. Later on, it is revealed that Anne Hathaway's character is actually, this is her avatar wrecking Seoul. And she finds, and they figure it out, and she starts doing this, like, and she does these dance moves, and then then people will be watching, and they'll see the giant monster doing the dance moves. And eventually it becomes, there's a Jason Sudeikis plays an old friend of hers from college.
Wow.
From high school.
What a cast.
And it's a little movie, and it's a dark comedy.
Sure.
You know, because all of a sudden, once Anne Hathaway figures out that she's the monster and that she's killing people because she's just sort of like drunk and stumbling around in the sandbox.
Right.
And meanwhile, people are just getting crushed. She just wants to hide. And Jason.
And what year is this?
This is last year. 2016. 2017 movie.
Yep.
And it was a. It's a little movie. It's got. The ending is great. The arcs. They have two. Both the Jason Sudeikis and the Anne Hathaway's characters have these fantastic arcs to them. Because Jason Sudeikis also learns that he has a role to play.
Huh.
And to tell you what it is would kind of spoil some of the movie.
Right.
But I think if you go watch the trailer.
Yeah.
The trailer will have you, it will have you intrigued. It's a weird, funky little movie. Not only scary.
I'm going to go watch it right after this podcast. So go see the 2017 Colossal and the 1998
Pumpkinhead.
You will be satisfied.
So, everybody, that will wrap up episode number 7 for us.
Number 7.
We made it.
Right? It's really happening. It's happening. It.
Right.
It's a for real thing.
So we will close out by recommending to you that before you buy any house, that you make sure that there was no graveyard there before the house was put up. So until next time. I don't know what the hell I was doing.